The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
My husband and I listen to your show all the time, and we just love it.
Love your show.
I think you're a wonderful combination of information, humor, and faith. I just really appreciate you being on the air.
It's a beautiful day.
And in 41 states, plus the District of Columbia, the average gasoline price is less than $2.99.
This combined is over $500 billion, $500 billion that the United States is going to be investing in clean energy solutions. Now you can quiet, Rick.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Well, it's great to be with you today. Welcome in. Hope your weekend was a good one. You got to be feeling good if you're an Eagles fan. Rolling. Although it's the Washington Commanders, so, you know, I mean, let's take it with a grain of salt. Farzi will be here to break it down a little bit. But, I mean, man alive, most sacks on the season. I have never seen. Carson Wentz was like a tackling dummy out there on Sunday. I couldn't believe that guy. I root for Wentz. I do. I don't root for the Washington Commanders, but I root for Wentz. And I got to say, after watching that yesterday, it seems pretty clear. The guy just, you know, you put him with three different teams and nothing seems to work out. And then you do have to start to conclude after a while. I don't know. There's just, you look at a guy who comes out of school and everybody thinks is going to be the star of the league. And in just a few years, he just, I don't. At some point, you've got to conclude it's not the team around him. It really is the quarterback, right? I guess. I don't know.
I mean, he got beat up, man. I think there were seven sacks before, like, the first half ended or something like that.
The only time he's been sacked more, I think, was the stat, was when he was the quarterback of the Eagles in that same stadium.
Oh, man.
So he, in that stadium now, has been, for his career for the Philadelphia Eagles, on both sides of the ball. Now, when he was with the Eagles and now with the Commanders, I think for the team, he holds the records for per one game of being sacked the most on both sides of the. I think I'm right about that. I'll have to ask Farzi about it. But just a dominant performance by the Eagles. I mean, it's, you know, you look around the league now, and the Eagles have. They look like, and I had a friend come to me before the season started and said, this is the team to beat. You watch. And I said, really? He said, yep, I think Eagles are going all the way to the Super Bowl. I said, well, I'm not doubting. I'm not arguing. I don't follow it closely enough. But a friend of mine said it sure as he bets that that's what he thinks is coming. And based on what we're seeing, man alive, they look pretty tough. You know, meanwhile, you know, don't look now, but Mahomes and the Chiefs, they lose to the Colts over the weekend. Ooh. The Bucs fall in Tampa Bay to Green Bay. Uh-oh. So the usual stars are. Here's the thing, too. It's like I heard them talking yesterday. This was kind of interesting to me. They were talking about on the Fox NFL desk, you know, after the games yesterday, Howie and Terry and all those other guys. They were all discussing, like, and if Hurts doesn't work out, don't forget, in their hip pocket, they've got a couple of number one picks still. And I thought, well, now that's a weird caveat. Is that still talk around here? I got to ask Farzetta, is there still talk that Hurts may not work out based on these last three games? I can't imagine it. But when they dropped that, I thought, are we still waiting for him to fail? Is that the talk?
There is. There is some talk locally. It's just like, well, you know, this is... we'll have to see about Jalen Hurts. I'm like 3-0.
What do you have to see? I mean, the guy, Well, I don't know. I'll defer to Farzi about it coming up. But that was fun. That should make any Eagles fan feel good. Hope your weekend was a fantastic one. 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Was not here on Friday, and I appreciate you being patient with me as I had to travel. My wife and I were honored to be a part of the Excellence in Christian Education Awards on Saturday at a tremendous venue, and I couldn't more heartily recommend this to you. I realize most people have no desire to go to the swamp for fear you'll be arrested, and that's probably legitimate, but I can confirm that I made it through a solid 3 days in the swamp and was never once rounded up by the January 6th committee. Biden, to my knowledge, although we stayed on the wharf in Washington, D.C., and I don't know if you're familiar with that area. I was not. It's been a few years since I've at least been to the swamp and stayed. I think I've popped in and popped out for business for the day, but this is the first time I've stayed multiple nights. And we stayed. Do you know the wharf, Fast Eddie, in Washington, D.C.? Are you familiar with that area?
I'm not, man. Sorry.
Well, it's new. It's only been there like 5 years or something, I guess. Huh. And it's right on the Potomac. It's on the other side of the bridge from the tidal basin where the Jefferson Memorial and the cherry blossoms. A lot of people know the cherry blossoms in the Jefferson and the tidal basin where the paddle boats are. That's kind of a famous. Well, right behind the Jefferson Memorial, across a bridge, is kind of the Potomac. And interestingly, it's also where Marine One, the president's helicopter, is stationed, not far down the channel. But they've built up this whole restaurant, hotel, bar strip along the water called the Wharf. There's water taxis there that'll take you to Georgetown and other places. Really fantastic. Apparently, you go a couple of blocks to the north where the Nationals play and you could be assassinated on site. But it's like every city these days that are run by Democrats. There's a nice little new tourist district area they've invested in, and you stray a few blocks and you'll be killed. But that's, you know, modern America under Democrats today. So whatever. The Wharf area itself, very, very nice. And I would recommend it to people if they expensive, because also every Democrat city is expensive. Like, prepare to, you know, make a mortgage payment to go stay and eat and whatnot. But that's where we stayed. And the reason I bring up Marine One is because I don't know how much tax money is being burned on a regular basis. I'm, you know, when I walk through Washington, D.C., that's all I see and think about are the blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks, miles and miles and miles of edifices and structures and department of this and department of that. And every single department in the government has giant multi-story office buildings. And I always look at these buildings and I just think to myself, that building is full of thousands of people taking a paycheck from you and me. And that's just one that I'm standing here in front of on this city block. You walk another city block is the department of this, and another city block is the department of that. It's blocks of people collecting money from you. And I was saying to some friends who were with us, I say, I can't drive through this city and not be somewhat dispirited in a way. It's beautiful in one sense, but dispiriting in another. You see the great monuments to the great men, Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln, and the World War II memorial is beautiful, the Vietnam memorial, Arlington. There's so many inspirational kind of bittersweet things that make you feel great senses of pride. But then I also can't help but ride around that town and go, man, do we blow a lot of money. Man, has this government just gotten completely out of hand. When I consider on Independence Mall and really a block in any direction from Independence Hall itself, maybe a block, and that's being generous, in any direction, was the entirety of the United States government when founded once upon a time. One city block was our entire government. And I'm talking Supreme Court, Congress, the whole deal. The whole shooting match was in one city block. And then you go to Washington, D.C., and you're like, you know, it's the whole town. Everyone's employed off of your back, basically. And so that's a little dispiriting. But Anyway, staying there on the wharf, and down the way is where Marine One is stationed, and it's just constantly doing, I don't know, test runs or drills or whatever, and it uses the Potomac for whatever reason as its guide. I don't quite understand what it does, but it takes off, cruises down the Potomac, and then I think it looks like it was going over to Arlington, which is just over the river, and then it would kind of turn around and come back. I don't know how many times it did that, but we were staying right there on the water. We had a really lovely room, and we were every morning, every single morning, two or three times as I'm sitting there having some coffee, pondering the day, Marine One, pucka da pucka da pucka da pucka da pucka, and then back again, back and forth. And I asked a friend of mine, I said, what is it doing? He said, oh, it's practice drills. He said, if it were really Biden up there, you'd see at least two, usually two or three, travel together when the president is there. But when not, they're just doing drills. I said, well, what are they practicing for? I don't know. So there's just, I don't know, there's just people that are just flying Marine One up and down the Potomac waiting for Grandpa to call them, I guess. I assume they have to be ready because he's always wanting to get to Delaware. So I assume you got to be ready to get that thing to the White House lawn to get him to Delaware because he's going there every other minute. I don't know. But anyway, had a lovely stay. And then the actual event, the Excellence in Education Awards, was held at the Museum of the Bible. Now, I don't know if you know what this is, but I readily confess that I didn't know about it. It's only been around since 2017 or so. Beautiful museum, huge museum in Washington, D.C., state of the art. And if you have the opportunity, like I said, I know a lot of you these days have no desire to go to the swamp. I don't blame you. This is actually not on the beaten path. It's not really super close to the mall. In fact, I was talking with the CEO of the Bible Museum at the awards banquet. He was in attendance. And I happened to speak with him a little bit about it. He said, Chris, when we were shopping to find a location for this building, we really wanted to be closer to the mall. He said, but that's all owned by the GSA. All the buildings up and down the mall are owned by the Government Services Administration, meaning you and me, really, but the government. And he said, there was no way in the world, even with, you know who's behind the Bible Museum, Fast Eddie?
I don't know.
The Green family. Do you know who they are? Mm-mm. Maybe your wife will. Mine will. Hobby Lobby.
Oh, okay.
The Greens, who own Hobby Lobby, of Hobby Lobby fame, based out of Oklahoma City, they're the ones that are the financial backers primarily. I don't know if it's exclusively, but they're the primary backer. In fact, here's what I learned. The Greens so love this project, and it was so dear to them. They have a place there where the Greens actually stay when they come to D.C. That is where they go. They don't go to some ritzy hotel. They stay at their museum, at this museum. And they have a room. This is what I was told. I don't know. I haven't seen it. They said they have a room there that is always at the ready if the Greens decide they want to drop in. Like, always standing by. Which, you know, if you're going to build a museum, I suppose that's the least you could do is give them a room.
Yeah.
But he said they tried to get this thing on the mall, and there was just no working with the government on it. They couldn't do it. It was just too costly. They were too antagonistic, the whole thing. So they ended up finding this facility. It'd be impossible to describe, but it's several blocks off the mall. You wouldn't know where it was if you weren't looking for it. I'll put it to you that way. It is beautiful. State-of-the-art technologically. It's an in-depth, deep dive for people that are real, real, real students. I mean, like, if you're a seminary student and you've been studying the Bible for years and years and years, this can be that intensive, but it's also very pop culture. They've got an original Bible of Elvis's on display, which is kind of cool. An embossed Elvis Aaron Presley Bible on display. Lots of ways in which the Bible has kind of culturally been significant in kind of modern times. They talk about athletics. And so there's a lot of hands-on stuff for kids. So it can be whatever you want it to be. It can be a really super intensive multiple days of study, or it can be kind of a nice visit and interactive, beautiful displays. They've even got a ride There's a simulator ride in the thing, which is a lot of fun, where you fly around Washington and you see all the places, and this would really make most Democrats mad. That's why Democrats probably catch fire when they walk through the place. This ride simulates you flying through Washington, D.C., and stops to show you everywhere around the town where scripture is either etched in or inscribed on monuments, from the Library of Congress to the Supreme Court to the Washington Monument, and on and on and on it goes. You travel all around the city and see all the places the Bible is inscribed. And really, when you, in its totality, understand how much of the scripture plays a role in not just our founding, but in the way our framers thought of our founding and constructed the country, it's pretty eye-opening and also a little dispiriting when you realize how far we've fallen, how far away from that we've fallen, how much our founders believed in Judeo-Christian principles. Our laws, our very natural rights, come from God. It is biblical. And to know that we have a political class today that just hates that. Oh, how they hate it. I'm so grateful it's there. And so I just take a minute to tell you that if you do have the opportunity, I do hope you'll go. This is not a paid political endorsement in any way, shape, matter, or form. This is just one guy who saw something that I didn't even know was there. And we actually, again, were there for this banquet where we honored Christian educators, 10 of them from around the country. The Herzog Foundation, which is devoted to kind of growing and expanding Christian education, teaching how to kind of grow and build and administer Christian schools around the country. They decided this was going to be, there was no such thing as it before they came up with the idea of honoring excellence in Christian teaching. So they flew 10 teachers from all over the country into Washington, D.C., and they put them up and gave them this beautiful dinner and awards presentation. I was the MC of the evening, and it was just, it was really a high honor. I must tell you, it was a very uplifting, positive, God-honoring event that I've been privileged to get to do a lot in this career of mine, but that for me was a high water point. It was just special. It was all positive. It was all good. It was people who whose hearts were in the right place, whose hearts were there for the Lord. And it, I don't know, I didn't, there's a lot in the news to be cynical about. And of course, we're going to get into all of it today. But I have a hard time coming away from a weekend like that and not feeling anything but enlightened and positive. There's a lot of good people and a lot of goodness going on in this country. You wouldn't know it from watching the cesspool that is our news these days. But that is that. All right, let's where do we want to start here? I've got a lot. You know what? What I probably ought to do is give myself some full runway for the story that is sort of the one that has been at the top of the stack all weekend long that I've been wanting to dive into. And that is what happened out in Bucks County this weekend. A lot of you have been reaching out to me. Lots has been written about this. I will tell you that Fast Eddie has been working diligently, as have we, trying to get to the source of this story, because I said, when I started seeing this breaking and people were notifying me about it, I wanted to hear specifically straight from the source. And if we couldn't hear from the source, I wanted to hear from the source's attorney. Because I don't know all the backstory on this thing. I have a good hunch that I understand what's going on here. And we're going to unpack it coming up. But suffice it to say, we have a Department of Justice that is trying to send a message to you and me and anybody else who opposes this Democrat Party, this regime, this government, the Biden administration, and their politics. You're on notice. At first blush, that's how I interpret it. Coming up this morning at 8:30, you'll want to be here because one of the first people to reach out to me when this happened over the weekend was candidate for governor here in Pennsylvania, Doug Mastriano. Doug Mastriano will be here at 8:30 to talk about this abhorrent raid on a Christian family who, as far as I can tell, and I say as far as I can tell because I don't have the fully vetted backstory to this whole thing, but as far as I can tell, is guilty of nothing more than standing up for the life of the lives of the unborn, and a dad who is specifically guilty of, I guess, standing up for his son. But anyway, we'll get into that in just a minute. Let me take you back in time before we bring you to the present. Abortion clinics in Philadelphia, it will come as no surprise to you, have a history of dust-ups. Philadelphia itself has a history of being one of the most grisly scenes of an abortion clinic, if that's what you want to call it, we've ever seen in Kermit Gosnell. This is, sadly, as with so many dark stories in the news today, Philadelphia is right up there at the top in terms of dark, grisly, seedy, unseemly, vile, disgusting things where Democrats are just content to turn a blind eye. So understand that Philadelphia is the epicenter of Kermit Gosnell, where, you know, a man was literally collecting aborted babies' body parts and keeping them in jars decorating his home, where women from his grisly botched abortions lost their lives. This is, you know, this is never a comfortable story. Nobody likes to talk about this. Certainly first thing in a new week, but let's just be clear. Philadelphia is the epicenter of some of the most grisly abortion in the country, okay? And if I may, let's not pretend that Republicans in the past have not turned a blind eye to it, too. I mean, we have Tom Ridge, in my view. And Tom Corbett, all the Toms. I mean, we have a... Not only do we have a terrible history with abortion in this state, we also have a terrible history with Toms in this state. Lots and lots and lots of failed Toms. The current Tom, who governs Pennsylvania, is literally on his resume proud of the fact that he escorted women to abortions. So we had two previous Republican Toms who did nothing to make abortion at least safe and rare. They allowed for Kermit Gosnells under their watch, and we've got a current Tom who is quite literally a guy who will escort women to abortion. So that's three Toms, all pretty failed to varying degrees on abortion. So I kind of wanted to set the stage so that we all understand where we are as a point of discussion. Naturally, then, of course, you get to Roe versus Wade being overturned by the Supreme Court, and this issue of abortion is now being returned to the states. And as such, as you well know and understand, this is something that the American left, particularly in Pennsylvania, believes they have the edge on. According to voter registration, women are registering like crazy. They're out registering men right now in Pennsylvania. We'll see what that means. I don't know what that means. Can't be sure. Who knows? But Democrats are hopeful that that means that women are loaded for bear and they can't wait to get out and vote on this one issue alone, abortion, because they are terrified that people like Doug Mastriano are going to become governor and make abortion impossible, illegal, outlawed in Pennsylvania. So that's kind of setting the table here. Democrats want to have a fight on abortion, sort of. Sort of, and I'm going to get into more of that in just a minute. Peter Ducey sort of exposed at the White House level why I think they don't, actually. And I'm going to contradict this notion that this is a winning, winning, winning issue for Democrats in a second, but that's not where I want to start. In Philadelphia, we also have a state representative called Sims. Now, I have dealt with him in previous shows. He's kind of skulked under a rock and disappeared for a while. But this guy Sims is one of these guys who I think is, I don't know how else to put it. There's some people I know who are gay and perfectly comfortable being gay. And then there's some gay people who are really, really angry at the world. And I don't know if it's because they haven't come to terms with it with daddy or what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but do you know what I'm talking about? If you know people like this, you know what I mean. There are people who seem like mentally well. Maybe they don't come from loving families. I don't know. So I don't want to put it all on the person who's angry. Brian Sims is a state representative. He still is, isn't he? I've lost track of this. Is he still representing parts of Philly? Okay. He's one of these guys that's gay and claims to be very proud of being gay, but is so angry about it. Viciously, vilely angry. Just a nasty, angry human being. Okay? Democrat state rep out of the Philly area in Harrisburg. This guy, if you remember, Brian Sims is the guy who when, I think it was when Pence came to visit several years ago, I think it was Pence, he tweeted a picture of him flipping the bird to Pence. He was very proud of this as a state rep, flipping the bird with his rainbow flag or whatever. Sims is also famous for going out to abortion clinics where pro-life people stand, and I've never participated in this. I don't know people that do this. I've read a lot about it. I've seen it before. Pro-life people who, usually Catholic, but not exclusively Catholic, who will spend their time, their free time, weekends, whatever, sometimes weekdays, they'll go and stand in front of abortion clinics, legally, on the sidewalk, not blocking, because you can't legally block people from walking into the place, but they'll stand on the sidewalk or adjacent to the building, and they will hold signs. They may speak gently. They're not, now again, this is my experience. I don't know of any that have ever screamed or yelled or harassed or menaced or called names. I know them to be nothing but generally peaceful people who are quiet, holding signs, displaying, you know, basically to some extent, don't do this. There are options. You don't have to go in and kill this baby. You know, let us talk to you about options to killing the baby. Well, staring this stuff in the face is not what Democrats want. They've never wanted this debate. They've never wanted this discussion. The abortion industry and Democrats do not want women even considering that there is an alternative to going into the killing mill of Planned Parenthood. Because they know when women are shown a fetal heartbeat, they know when women have a conversation with people who aren't hysterical lunatics and say, we can get through this. Even if you don't want to be a mother, there are options, loving options for this baby. You don't have to terminate this baby. We can get you on your feet to raise it if you wish, or we can make sure this baby has a loving home. I have heard so many wonderful stories of women who have been presented with options that are not, your life is over if you get pregnant. And sadly, there are too many women in this country that still believe life is over when they get pregnant. It is not. And I would just say to you again, there are far too many great, great people doing great work in pro-life facilities, in true family planning facilities, where they will sit you down and explain your options. Your life does not have to be over because you're pregnant. Democrats hate that message, and they have always hated that message. Because Planned Parenthood is a gold mine. Brian Sims is one of these guys who hates it more than most. So much so that back in 2019, and I have the story here in front of me, Pennsylvania State Representative harasses a peaceful pro-life activist. State Representative Brian Sims, elected in 2012 to represent parts of Philadelphia, evidently believes his job requires him to avoid the state house and instead police the space in front of abortion clinics, protecting some of his citizens from pious pro-lifers. This weekend, Sims filmed a live stream video as he harassed an older woman praying on the sidewalk in front of Planned Parenthood on, is this on Locust?
Yes.
All right, let's take a listen. This is the video he shot. This is from Brian Sims himself.
Hi, everyone. Representative Brian Sims here, and I am outside the Planned Parenthood at Southeastern Pennsylvania. Oh, no, they're leaving now. What we've got here is a bunch of protesters, a bunch of pseudo-Christian protesters who've been out here shaming young girls for being here.
Hi.
And so here's the deal. I've got $100 to anybody who will identify any of these three.
So we're
going to donate to Planned Parenthood. I'm going to donate to Planned Parenthood. So look, a bunch of white people standing up in front of a Planned Parenthood shaming people.
Really,
there's nothing Christian about what you're doing. Nothing Christian at all about what you're doing. Nothing Christian or loving or godly about what you're doing. So I've got $100 to anybody who will identify. $100. See if you got some friends out here. $100. It'd be easier if you just give me your name and your address.
Rich
Bominski. Rich, where are you from?
Lansdowne.
Rich, what makes you think that it's your job to tell women what's right for their bodies? And the truth is, I'm not really asking because I don't care. Shame on you. Guys, Planned Parenthood out here faces attacks daily from people like this, from pseudo-Christians saying that they are here to somehow protect their own version of Christianity. So do me a favor. If you've watched this, please consider giving $100 to Planned Parenthood. I'm going to do the same.
Yeah, so as National Review wrote it at the time, this is an attempt to remove a citizen's very last means of dissenting in a normal constitutional order. This is an elected state representative from Harrisburg bullying and trying to dox peaceful, legal protesters in front of a Planned Parenthood. So that's actual video that he shot and posted, trying to dox young women. And you can hear, you know, a tell with people who are unstable when they do things like this? What's the tell? It's rare that there's an audio tell. Do you know what it is? Do you hear it? Do you hear the breathless? Do you know what that is? That's an angry panic. That tells me that is an unwell person. If you're confident in what you do, you don't sound like this when you talk to people. He's not well. So Brian Sims is a mentally unstable, angry person who represents, well, fittingly, many of the constituents in the Philadelphia area, I guess. So that, only mentally ill people would vote for somebody like this anyway. But so anyway, he caught a lot of hell, even from Democrats, for this video. The reason I give you this history is because you need to know it going forward. This is the kind of harassment that pro-life protesters have been enduring themselves. They're not screaming and yelling and harassing people going into these Planned Parenthood clinics. They're just standing peacefully by. And people like Brian Sims don't like constitutional protest. They don't like protected speech that doesn't jive with them. And so they have menaced and harassed people like these for years. This is now documented because he himself has taped himself doing it. So that brings us to the most recent story. It's the story of Mark Hoke, a pro-life, they call him a pro-life anti-porn speaker and activist, a devout Catholic, father of seven. He's the founder of something called the King's Men for Sanctity of Catholic Men. Is it Houck? H-O-U-C-K? Okay. Anyway, Mark Houck was arrested by several FBI who went raiding his home in the dark early morning hours of the weekend. Saturday morning, I believe it was. An armed SWAT team, here's the story, from CatholicVote.org. SWAT team entered the home of Catholic pro-life leader Mark Houck Friday morning, sorry, not Saturday, arresting him in front of his wife and children. According to a later report from the Daily Beast, a Philadelphia federal court filing shows Houck is now facing felony charges for allegedly pushing a patient escort outside an abortion clinic nearly a year ago. Now, the reason I gave you all that wind-up to this story is because I want you to understand what these people are dealing with. Mark Houck, I don't know Mark Houck. And I've asked Fast Eddie very specifically to get involved in this story only because when allegations like this are made, I like to get the full story. I like to get a story vetted. I'd like to hear as much as I can out here on the air, in the open, when I don't know people involved. Because I can't vouch for the character of Mark Houck. I don't know him. I don't know this family. All I can do is trust the reporting on it. And the reporting on it says that, I'm going to boil this down to its essence, that he and his son previously had been out protesting in front of one of these clinics when someone got in his face and his son's face, started his 12-year-old son at the time. He was harassing his 12-year-old son, and Houck continued to ask this guy to get out of his son's face, leave his son alone, and the guy wouldn't. So think of a Brian Sims type.
I'm sorry.
It wasn't Brian Sims, but I play the Brian Sims tape to illustrate that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with Brian Sims-like people, maybe even more aggressive. And allegedly, this person got in this 12-year-old boy, this Hauk boy's face, and Mark Hauk, the father, said, look, you get out of my son's face. And apparently, again, I don't know, but apparently there was a shove or some shoving, Fast Eddie. Is that your understanding?
Yes, yes, Mark. And this guy that got in their face was an escort. He was what Tom Wolf was. He was one of these, yeah.
And as such, because this guy, was he actively, when the alleged shoving happened, I don't gather that this was actually during an escort.
No, just that the guy was. So apparently.
And this is what makes it sticky. Because this guy was an escort, officially an escort to Planned Parenthood, I think that's actually what makes this a particularly sticky story. And this is, this definition of an escort is how this whole story hinges, I think. This is my read, folks. I'm flying a little blind here. I hate speculation on stuff like this. I hate it. I was so desperate. I was begging. And Fast Eddie killed himself trying to get people on the show today. Suddenly everybody clammed up. All weekend everybody was talking about it. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, today when thousands of people have an audience, nobody wants to talk. So that's very frustrating because I like dealing with facts. But my two cents, I gather that this escort went for a fight, was particularly aggressive and trying to agitate Mark Hauk, was picking on a 12-year-old boy for being present. And because this guy was actually a escort by definition, he was angling for this. I think that these people actively provoke these pro-life protesters with the hope something like this will happen. And in Hauk's case, there was a shoving match of some kind. One shove, two shoves, I don't know. Can't know. No idea. But because this guy is an escort, a Planned Parenthood escort, DOJ has gotten involved. Now, this became a lawsuit. Before this got to DOJ and the FBI raid, this became a lawsuit that ultimately was dropped. Courts, the lower courts saw no merit to any of this. But all of a sudden, and this happened how long ago? This shoving incident. Fascinating. This was a while ago. This wasn't like recently, as I understand it.
Correct. I think like a year or two ago.
So this was a while ago, folks. This wasn't, you know, this wasn't last weekend. This was calendar years ago. Fast forward to Friday morning. When dozens of, and this from the postmillennial.com, Republican candidate for governor Doug Mastriano released a blistering statement Saturday condemning Biden's FBI for an armed SWAT raid of a pro-life activist in front of his family, including seven young children. This morning, a heavily armed SWAT team of dozens of FBI agents raided the home of Mark Hauk in Bucks County and his wife, terrified children, over a case that was long thrown out by the district court in Philadelphia. Mark and Ryan Marie Hauk's seven children were traumatized and in tears as they witnessed their parents held at gunpoint and their father hauled away in handcuffs. Citizens across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania join me in expressing their outrage at the early morning raid executed on a young family. This show of force carried out by the Biden regime against ordinary Americans is an abuse of power. This stands against the fundamental principles on which our country was founded. As governor, I will not allow the police state of Joe Biden to enforce his persecution against his political enemies on sacred Pennsylvania soil. Not on my watch. Approximately 30 agents with weapons drawn raided the Hauk home, leaving his wife and children screaming and traumatized. They had big, huge rifles pointed at Mark and me. The kids were screaming. It was all very scary and very traumatic. The wife told a couple of different media outlets, must have been at least 15 marked and unmarked units on my yard. As I opened the door with my hands raised, I could see AR-15s pointed directly at me. All my children were asleep. Sirens lit up. Doorbell rang multiple times, yelling, pounding on the door, 7 a.m. My children terrified, traumatized, and victimized. Over something that happened a couple of years ago. Now, folks, this is Merrick Garland and Joe Biden's Department of Justice sending a message. That's all this is. This is a political issue. This is a campaign issue. This is an issue that they actually think benefits them. This kind of behavior, this kind of outrageous abuse, is something that Democrats have convinced themselves is merited, and they think they're on the side of better angels here. Look, it's up to us this fall to decide whether this kind of thing is going to continue or not. I don't have a full and complete picture other than I can tell you that this, when this went to a lower court, it was tossed. It was not a case that a court of law decided to take up. Merrick Garland decided it warranted dozens of FBI and SWAT teams to go storming into the Hauk home in Bucks County Friday morning at 7 a.m. Why? Well, because don't you know the guy that was shoved by Mark Hauk was an escort. And you see, if you do that to an escort to a Planned Parenthood, you're in violation of a federal law that protects women to be able to walk unobstructed into a Planned Parenthood office. Never mind that this guy was not actually escorting anybody to an abortion at the time of the event. But because he was in the role of escort. So don't you doubt that Pennsylvania Democrats, don't you doubt that Tom Wolf, don't you doubt that Josh Shapiro, don't you doubt that Democrats in Pennsylvania had everything to do with Merrick Garland and Joe Biden raiding the home of this Catholic pro-life Hauk family. Don't you doubt it. So we're on message. We're on note. We're on notice, I should say. This is the message from the Biden White House. If you're a Christian, if you're pro-life, if you oppose them, you could be raided next. And this is what we're up against. This is what the vote's about in November. Choose accordingly. And look, I know that people on the left smile when the homes of people they don't like are swarmed with screaming armed federal agents in the dark of early morning. I would just ask leftists to consider what it means when an election changes leadership. Elections will change. Elections do change leaders. But the thing is I don't want this tit-for-tat stuff. I don't want, you know, I heard that over the weekend. Republicans would never do this. They don't have the balls to do this. We just wait till Republican. I don't want this anymore, period. This practice must stop.
This
period.
Is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hey, your show is awesome.
Hi, good morning. Love you. Love your staff. Thank you so much. God bless y'all.
Love you and Fans Daddy and the show.
You guys are doing a fantastic job. Thank you very much, Chris.
And in 41 states, plus the District of Columbia, the average gasoline price is less than $2.99. That's why it's so important that we pass the Inflation Reduction Act, which I proposed in the beginning but didn't get passed till this summer. This law will cut costs for families, help reduce inflation at the kitchen table.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Yeah, look, I'm going to get more into this story. Those of you just tuning in today, and I know lots of you are, by the way, I welcome you. Always new people happening across the show, and we're grateful that you're here. I welcome you, particularly as we inch closer now to November. Can't wait to be with those of you who have purchased tickets to our sold-out event on October 19th with Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, Mike Gallagher, and me. That's going to be a great time out there at the Fuge in Warminster. And if you weren't able to attend, well, bummer. We still have some tickets available to win. So we sold the thing out already. But you can go win tickets if you go to 990theanswer.com and get registered. We're going to be giving a few of them away. Can't wait to get to town. I have more to say, and I know you do too. And so I want you to know that we're going to talk some more. Spent the last half hour kind of talking about this raid on the Hauk family in Bucks County and their home. Kind of wanted to give you the broad 30,000-foot view of all that has happened since Friday and this raid. There's a GoFundMe page that's been established for this family's legal defense, which I'm sure when you go up again, I can't imagine being raided by the FBI. And then now you're going to go up against the Department of Justice in a court of law. they'll destroy you. That's their design. So a legal defense fund is absolutely 100% necessary here for the Houck family. And as such, one has been established and I'm told has gotten near, if not probably already, probably over 100 grand. They were shooting for 75 grand, and I think they've well surpassed that based on what I've read, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get into more detail about that coming up. So don't go anywhere. Doug Mastriano, who's running for governor in Pennsylvania, also wants a moment of your time. He'll be with us at 8:30 to talk about this story. So sit tight for that. But now for something completely different and more uplifting and to put an actual smile on your face, a needed distraction from this stuff these days. Your Philadelphia Eagles, Don't Look Now, ladies and gentlemen, are 3-0. And I was thinking to myself this morning when I was watching that game, I was actually in the air yesterday, and that was I was fortunate enough that that was one of the games that Southwest was broadcasting for free. So I actually got to watch that whole game. And I saw that leap and grab by Devontae Smith. When he did you see that thing? He jumped. It looked like he jumped 12 feet in the air and then came bang down on his back. And I thought, oh, that's got to hurt. And I guess it did kind of knock the wind out of him, made him a little hurt. You know, he's young. So I was thinking, oh, he's got to be sore. And then I realized, no, there's only got to be one guy more sore than Devontae Smith this morning. Carson Wentz. Mark Farzetta is with us, host of the Farzy Show. If you haven't watched it, I hope that you will. He's got a great looking new set, by the way. I was just watching some of his work over the weekend. Looks fantastic, Mark. Good morning.
Oh, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Yeah, good morning to you, my friend. It's been a while. And
great
subject to talk about today in the Philadelphia Eagles. Yes, Devontae Smith, I have not seen athleticism like that since Chris Segal left field Pal softball game 4 years ago. That is the only time I've ever seen athleticism like that.
Citizens Bank great. Park, you were there. You witnessed the greatness. Yes.
I believe your plaque is still up there. Devontae Smith yesterday, there's one little critique I had about Devontae Smith. It's nitpicking. But one critique I had about Devontae Smith through his rookie season, and that was just stronger hands. He's got great hands, can catch anything thrown at him, but the minute somebody gets a hand on it or a swipe on it or a little bit, he drops the football. The passes were broken up. This year, he has taken leaps and bounds to having stronger hands when going up to get the football. And the perfect example of that wasn't only the play you just referenced when it came to a 44-yard completion with Jalen Hurts bombing the ball downfield to Devontae Smith to go up with two defenders around him and come down with him at the goal line. But that fourth down play, time clicking off the clock, seconds ticking off the clock just before halftime, they drop back on the fourth and goal. Jalen Hurts surveys the field, finds his man, Devontae Smith, in the corner of the end zone, who jumps up, and I believe it was St. Juice, the quarterback for the Washington Commanders, that was draped all over him and trying to interfere with the ball, and Devontae Smith just out-muscled him. And as he said so eloquently after the game, my ball or nobody's ball, that's the definition of the mindset you have to have if you want to be a great wide receiver, and he certainly has been that, especially yesterday. Just absolutely a dominating performance by the Eagles' second-year wide receiver.
Now, here's what bugged me. After another dominant performance, and the Eagles just seemed to be rolling, they looked like the team to beat, certainly in the NFC. And after all of this great, great vibe, I don't know if this is just that perennial Eagles disrespect that you see. Howie Long at the NFL desk on Fox, I don't know if you caught this comment. It kind of irked me a little. I don't know if this is that Philly edge coming out in me or what, but I had a little chip on my shoulder about it. Here's what he said. You know, the great thing about the Eagles is they're set up with a couple of first-round draft picks in their hip pocket if Hurts doesn't work out. And I thought, what are people still talking about if Hurts doesn't? What are they talking about if Hurts doesn't work out?
Yeah, that's that was an opinion that's probably 3 weeks old. Last year you could say that he was possibly going to go up against three first-round picks, but the quarterback class wasn't going to be all that great. This year you could start out the season, maybe after the Lions game, and say, oh, he ran too much. I could at least understand that when you have a stat line that shows you had 17 rushes. But he was running for his life in that first game. Ever since then, when you see how he played against the Lions, see how he played against the Vikings, and then how he played yesterday, Hurts is playing right now like a guy who is going to get that franchise quarterback contract. He is going to get that big deal at $30 to $40 million per season. He's going to get that contract. Here's why that's such a dumb comment, though. We talked a lot. I know this is a whole other conversation, but we've talked a lot about a guy like Ben Simmons working out in the offseason, coming into the regular season, and having that jump shot. Not even a three-pointer, just a jump shot. It never happened. You go back even further. You go back to Donovan McNabb. All the great things he did throughout his career, the one thing he never improved upon was that touch pass. Jalen Hurts, in one offseason, has shown leaps and bounds that he has improved through just one offseason as the Eagles starting quarterback and a second season in the same offensive system, which he hasn't had since he was in high school and his dad was his coach. He has shown what hard work, knowing your playbook, knowing your scheme, getting better weapons around you. Thank you, Howie Roseman, in the front office for A.J. Brown, and also drafting Devontae Smith a year ago, and getting a guy like Zach Pascal as your fourth wide receiver. He has shown how you can improve from one year to the next year based on hard work and improving the pieces around you. So the conversation as far as if Jalen Hurts doesn't work out, Jalen Hurts has worked out. It has already happened to the point where he has worked out. If this season goes on and by some drastic measure he goes in the tank, which I completely doubt, then you have that conversation. You don't have that conversation while the guy is playing at an absolute dominant level of football.
Mark Farzetta with us, host of the Farzee Show. Mark, M-A-R-C, Farzetta, F-A-R-Z-E-T-T-A. He's on Twitter. If you FarzeeShow.com, F-A-R-Z-Y, FarzeeShow.com if you haven't watched it. I hope that you will. I don't understand how you'd ever consider Jalen Hurts as anything but working out, given all the work he's put in, as you just pointed out. I even read that he went west, like out to California, and literally worked on, I don't know how they work on this because I'd never played, but they literally work on strength of throw, pivoting, standing still, not dropping your shoulders. It's almost like, a golf swing in a way, passing a football.
Oh, yeah. It's that precise. He worked out with a guy named Tom House. I mean, when they were talking about Nick Sirianni at the owners' meetings addressed the media, and they had asked him about Jalen Hurts and what's he doing in the offseason to improve, and he goes, I'm not going to mention any names, but he's out there in California working on his mechanics. And I'm like, oh, California? He's with Tom House. Like, that can only mean one thing, and that's a guy that worked with Tom Brady. That's a guy who's a pitcher in baseball and basically took his mechanics and applied it to the quarterback position and has worked with a number of quarterbacks. And now one of the most recent ones is Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts also, this is the thing, he's a very, and I hate using this cliche, but it's just so true, he's a very Philly guy. He wants to work his butt off. He wants to reach his absolute maximum potential, and that's what Philadelphia demands. Philadelphia, yep. If you come in as a great athlete, if you come into this city as a great athlete, we want you to leave this city as a Hall of Famer. Like, if you come in great, we only want you to improve upon. We want you to look at great as your foundation and then build a really nice luxury home on top of it. That's how Philadelphia looks at their athletes. Jalen Hurts came in with a lot of talent, and talent is great, but there's a lot of wasted talent in the world, and you and I both know that. Everyone knows that. But when it comes to Jalen Hurts, he came in with talent. The thing that separates him is his work ethic. The fact that he was a second-round pick, the fact that he had to leave Alabama, go to Oklahoma, to keep on competing and all that stuff, and has improved his game greatly just from year one to year two of being a starter, shows you just how hard he works. We've seen other athletes. They've posted the pictures of them working out. They're in the gym. And every time I see something like that on social media, I'm like, wait, no way, an athlete working out? What? Jalen Hurts, it actually bears fruit. You see it going into this season. You see it through the first three games. The thing that I've seen on Jalen Hurts' game that has improved so much, and you could see that the hard work paid off, is it's not necessarily the deep ball, because I was never in the school that he had some terrible rag arm. I thought his arm was serviceable. I thought it was a serviceable arm. He obviously he's shown that through the first three games of the season he could throw the deep ball. But what really has impressed me is the slant route. Every slant route or every crossing route you see him throw, that ball is right there to hit the receiver in stride. You look at Craig Calcaterra's first catch in the NFL yesterday, the Eagles tight end. He's going across the field. Jalen Hurts hasn't worked with Craig Calcaterra a whole bunch. And then what do you see him do? You throw over the middle of the field, where he struggled, by the way, last year, throwing over the middle of the field. Threw on point to Calcaterra. He catches the ball, takes it another 20 yards. Like, that was an in-stride throw. It was a perfect throw that I thought really showed off the work that Jalen Hurts has put in the offseason.
I heard some team stat. Now, you know, because I've talked to you about this before, Mark Farzetta, I am a personal, just a personal fan. As a man, as a person, I personally am a fan of Carson Wentz. Not the football player, even necessarily, just as a character. But, boy, you watched yesterday, and I think I heard the stat that guy has now been sacked on both sides of the ball with both the Eagles and now the Commanders, both in that stadium, like some kind of record amount for both sides. Seriously, yeah, like that was a disaster.
Yeah, so when Carson Wentz was going through his rookie year and they just traded Sam Bradford and became a starter, he was on a roll. And if you remember, Lane Johnson got suspended for 10 games.
Yes.
And I believe it was his second offense for PEDs. And was it Halapulavati Vaitai, I believe, got the start at right tackle and got demolished by Ryan Kerrigan. Absolutely demolished. I mean, Vaitai is with the Lions now, and I hope he has a great career and all that. It was a big part of the Eagles Super Bowl championship, all that. But, oh, my God. I remember it was like the second play of the game, and Carson Wentz's name was literally ripped off the back of his jersey. And
yes.
I think he got sacked seven times in that game.
Yeah, it was like a record or something for the Eagles, wasn't it? Something like that?
Yeah. Well, I know there was another guy, Winston Justice, who allowed, I think it was 10 sacks. Not all of them apparently were on him, but whatever. But with Carson Wentz, yes, in that building, he has been sacked an ungodly amount of times.
I just feel sorry for the guy, but I guess you can only conclude now with the Eagles and the Colts and now the Commanders. I don't know how you rule a career like that. That's just one of those most fascinating things where a guy comes out white hot as one of the biggest stars in football, or is supposed to be, and then just doesn't. Just can't figure it out or something.
Yeah, it's a wild thing. It's it reminds me of like the field things about like just reading too many of your press clippings. Where you feel like, oh no, I am this good, and you're very confident. The organization has obviously built you up, and you're thinking, I am this good. And you know what? You go out in 2017, you play that good. You play like an MVP. You were the MVP of the league through 13 weeks, and then the injury happened. And then, I mean, he really was. And I give credit to some people that will acknowledge the fact that you look at Carson Wentz in 2018, the year after the Super Bowl, and it was like, all right, this quarterback is going to sit on the bench behind you. He's the guy that won the Super Bowl for a fan base that had been waiting for a Super Bowl forever, and you're going to be the starter over him. So good luck to you. Imagine playing under that kind of pressure. I can only imagine as a human that would get to anybody, but I think that hero gene in Carson Wentz of, no, I can do this. I can, whether it's trying to overcome somebody that won the Super Bowl as your backup, or whether that's being in the pocket, the pocket's collapsing, you're about to get sacked, and you're thinking, no, I can still make this throw, or I can still escape this. And that's just something that I think Carson Wentz cannot get through his head. And you know what? If the Commanders just continue to be an anomaly to me. If Frank Reich couldn't fix Carson Wentz in Indianapolis,
I know.
What the heck gives Ron Rivera the idea that they can fix him in Washington? But hey, you know what? Best of luck to you. So far, it's not working out, though.
Listen, I looked down this schedule, Farzetta. I don't know. I mean, look, it's the NFL, and anything can happen. Just ask the Kansas City Chiefs. Ooh. But I look at this schedule, and I don't see a single team that scares me for the Philadelphia Eagles. Not a one. You?
Yeah, no. I mean, right now they're playing like you mentioned it, the team to beat. I mean, they're one of three undefeated teams. We'll see what the Giants do tonight against the Cowboys.
Packers, maybe the Packers. Yeah. That's the only one maybe.
Sure. I mean, look at the Packers yesterday. They almost lost to a team that was not that only having Tom Brady is bad, but I mean, you were down Evans, you were down Godwin, you were down I forget who else, but Julio Jones. You had Cole Beasley who was making his next rap album, I believe, on the sidelines before he got signed as a free agent by the Bucks last week. His rap album was a total flop, by the way. But he was a free agent, and they just brought him in off the street to play at 33 years old. So the Packers just struggled. But when you have Aaron Rodgers, you never know. I will say this: the reason I wouldn't be as, or the reason I'm not scared as I might have been in the past is, the Eagles secondary is playing unbelievable.
Oh.
Like you look at Jalen Hurts, how well he's been playing. James Bradberry, Avante Maddox, and, of course, Darius Slay, they've been playing phenomenal football. Terry McLaurin got over 100 yards yesterday, and it's barely acknowledged because they were all garbage yards. It was all in the fourth quarter when Carson Wentz has mainly run up his total yards. So for me, not a team on the schedule right now scares me because the Eagles are playing at such an amazing clip right now.
You could argue that this is one of the. I mean, I'm not discounting how dominant the Eagles are, but this schedule, at least the way these teams that they're about to face look, none of them look great. I mean, not a one of them. I don't look at a single team in the rest of this season and go, "Oh no, here comes a buzzsaw." I think all of them have dropped one, at least one.
Yeah. Kyler Murray in 2 weeks is an interesting one. I mean, this matchup with Doug Peterson is going to be interesting this coming week at 1 o'clock Sunday at the Link. That's home, though, obviously, so that's great. There's a couple, and divisional games can always feel like they could be a toss up. Certainly, yesterday was an example of that against Washington, but. It's one of those things like you don't want to get too cocky, even though you have nothing to do with the outcome of the game.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about this, look, the Eagles aren't going to, not to break news here, but the Eagles aren't going to go undefeated. They're going to have a game or two that's going to be like, how the heck did they lose that? But as I talked about it on my show today, and I've mentioned a couple of different times already with some, friends, the Eagles have phenomenal veteran leadership on this team. And Jason Kelce, before the season, talked about comfort, feeling comfortable in your role. And he's like, I hope no one's comfortable because the minute you're comfortable, you're complacent. The minute you're comfortable, you don't dissect wins like you should. Oh, yeah, well, we got away with it. We won. So why talk about that one mistake? After the Lions game, after the first game of the season, I heard Jonathan Gannon come out and say a lot of the same things that I heard from Jason Kelce without referencing Jason Kelce, but he talked about that win as if it was a loss. And I thought that's the mindset you need to go through an NFL season. Nick Sirianni did the same thing. Yeah, we did a lot of the great things, but man, we got to do this, that, and the other to make sure we have a first. We got away with this today. We're not going to get away with it in another game. Like, that's the mindset you have to have. And that's why I hate when people say, oh, after a win, you're too negative or whatever. Well, hold on. It's not just about winning right now against Washington. It's about taking this way that you played today. And can you play this way against the Packers and still win? Can you play this way against the Cardinals and still win? And the answer to that most is no. But when you play those games, you try to rise to the occasion, play up to your opponent, never down to them. And that's what a good coach like Nick Sirianni, I think, is able to get through to his team. And that's what I think good veteran leaders like Jason Kelce are also able to get through to their team. That message of the constant pursuit of perfection.
This is going to be a fun season to watch, and Mark Farzetta is always a great resource to us to navigate us through a fun season, I think. By the way, if you don't know what Mark Farzetta looks like, his doppelganger, we've concluded, as is most of the city that knows Mark, is the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, Nick Sirianni. It's uncanny. It's really uncanny. If you don't know what Mark looks like, he looks like the Philadelphia Eagles head coach. It's really striking.
I look like a balder, slighter, fatter, younger brother of Nick Sirianni. Yes.
Farzi, thanks for waking up with us. We will talk to you again a little later in the season.
Always a pleasure. Congrats on your Chiefs.
Thank you, brother. Well, not yesterday, but so far, so good. We'll see. Yeah, thanks, man. Have a great one. Telephone number 610-850-0990, 610-850. Yeah, that's the one thing. Being up in the air yesterday, I was able to watch that Eagles dominant performance. I didn't have to watch a minute of that disaster in Indianapolis. Oh, my. I landed and just got updates on that thing. I was glad I missed every second of that. Yuck. Anyway, 610-850-0990. What a great I got to tell you, just because it's a nice welcome distraction from the utter hell and rot of most of the news these days. I am so grateful that we have Ray Didinger and Tony Bruno and Mark Farzetta in the bullpen to talk Eagles football this season. Aren't you? What a blessing. Those guys are just the best.
It's literally three people that I listen to that I can, they boil it down so that I can understand it, if that makes any sense.
And they're all good men. I mean, they really are. You know, lest you think that this city is just chock-a-block full of nothing but left-wing partisan hack sports journalists. No. There's some guys that still like to play it straight and just be nice and talk about sports. Ray and Tony and Farzi do. So they have all committed to kind of playing on rotation here and analyzing Eagles football for us this year, and I'm thrilled. I know you stick to the issues, people don't like it, but I need it. I'll have a stroke if I have to talk about this hellscape every day without an interruption. All right? Go get your own show. Jen Psaki stumbled into something that is just 100% true. Now that Jen Psaki is unencumbered by having to stand up there and lie from the White House podium, she will occasionally swerve into a profundity. She was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd yesterday, and she described the midterms and how she saw this breaking. And she was very, very clear on what Democrats had to do, and it's what we've always known they were trying to avoid. They don't want to talk about the husk. If they have to talk about the husk, and if Republicans are effective in making this about the husk, remember, Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, folks, two-term successful Democrat presidents, lost sizable majorities in the House when they were president and they had a Democrat House. The husk has four seats control right now. Four. The odds in an ordinary time, not the cesspool in which we live today, the odds are heavily stacked against the husk. And if this is a referendum on the husk, it's always been problematic for Democrats, which is why we're seeing what we're seeing now. Why was the Houck family raided on Friday in Bucks County? Why did that happen? Because they're trying to do something. They're trying to send a message right now to the American public. Anything but the husk. And Jen Psaki actually gives up the ghost here. Here's the playbook. Do you want to know? Let me just say it to you one more time this way. Do you want to know why the Houck family's home was raided Friday in Bucks County? Jen Psaki, not literally, but inadvertently, explains it. Listen.
She would force pregnancy on victims of rape and incest. Enforcing that law now makes cops responsible for going after doctors and nurses and medical teams who can be arrested, charged criminally. But it's a waste of resources, precious resources that we need every day to keep our communities safe.
I'm not sure how this is either really effective or you're trying to get the voter to take two issues and tie them together. You're trying too hard. I don't know, but an interesting response.
Yeah, look, I think that Democrats, if the election is about who is the most extreme, as we saw, you know, Kevin McCarthy touch on there with Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'll say her name, sitting over his left side, then they're going to win. Mm-hmm. If it is a referendum on the president, they will lose. And they know that. They also know that crime is a huge vulnerability for Democrats. I would say one of the biggest vulnerabilities. And if you look at Pennsylvania, for example, what's been interesting to me is it's always you follow the money and where are people spending money. And in Pennsylvania, the Republicans have been spending millions of dollars on the air on crime ads against Fetterman because that's where they see his vulnerability. So, yes, the economy is hanging over everything.
Right.
But you do have to look at state by state factors. And crime is a huge issue in the Pennsylvania race.
Aha. Did you pick up on it? If this election is about who is the most extreme, Democrats will win, she says. Now, the reason this is important, you say to yourself, well, Chris, it's not even close. The Democrats are extreme. Yeah, of course they are. We have a politicized and weaponized federal government. They're raiding political opponents. Democrats are energized by totalitarian behavior. You and I know that. We're watching it. We see it. I don't, in fact, I'm not even sure Republicans writ large have totally internalized where we are. I don't think the party at large totally understands what you and I do, that our homes are now being raided. I don't think the Republicans in Washington get that. Maybe it's starting to sink in. We're playing for keeps in November. This is a fascistic movement on the march. It's a Cold War. It's a real-time nightmare. This is hell. And here's what's interesting. They still believe Donald Trump, the American left, I don't think they believe it, but I think they're trying to get most of the American people to believe that Donald Trump and you and I who would vote for him or have voted for him are scarier and more extreme than what we're living through right now under them and their totalitarianism, their authoritarianism. Who, Jen Psaki said the election is going to tilt on who is more extreme. Well, the Democrats want to convince you that in Bucks County, there is a Catholic father of seven and his wife who are pro-life advocates who spend their time with their children in front of Planned Parenthoods protesting abortion peacefully. Dozens of FBI were used to raid their home in Bucks County on Friday morning. Why? What's the answer?
I mean, you could easily, the optics of this, this is going to be a headline story, even on local news.
Bingo. And the optics are what? For the uninformed, not for you and me. We understand this is chilling to you and me. This is horrifying to you and me. But understand what it is. Understand what we're watching. Yes, it's using the weight of the federal government and the Department of Justice to intimidate political opposition. That is true. It is that. And that is extreme and frightening. But that's not the point of this. That's not the way Democrats see it. How do they see it?
They see it as an extreme right-wing pro-lifer gets taken down for assaulting one of the left-wing abortion clinic escorts.
That's right. So, folks, that's what we're up against. The American left says Merrick Garland and Joe Biden are weeding out the extremists wherever they're found. So extreme, so dangerous are these people. We must send in SWAT teams to round them up. That's how extreme these people are. This is an extension of Kyle Rittenhouse. It's the same, different issue, but same milieu. The American government at present, run by Democrats, the DOJ, run by Merrick Garland, they are using the full force of their department to make the sale to the American people that anyone who opposes them is so scary, so extreme, so dangerous, we have to use SWAT teams. The same can be said of Mar-a-Lago. We have to use SWAT teams on the former president to raid his home and go through the documents that he stole. Serious, secret, important documents. And the only means of procuring them was to raid his residence to get them because he wouldn't give them up. Imagery, imagery, imagery. This is all about the show. They're trying to convey to their voters, to their base, all of us who oppose them are deeply dangerous and scary. Now, here's the question. Does it piss off and alarm people more that this family of nine was raided at 7 in the morning on Friday in Bucks County? Or does it, are there more of us that look at that raid and say, well, thank God Merrick Garland and Joe Biden acted and are rooting out those crazies wherever they're found? That's the question before us, really, at its root. I know you think it's outrageous, and so do I. We're at a terribly, this is a precipice. We're on a precipice. This is a scary, scary time for the country. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I don't need to. But look, this attitude, and I saw it bubbling up, if I may, on social media, and I don't mean to sound paternalistic here or condescending, but I don't like this attitude among some. Yeah, well, you just wait until we get in charge. Yeah, you just wait. You know what? They don't want, or I read, you know, Republicans don't have the balls to do this kind of stuff to Democrats when they get in. No, that's the wrong attitude. This has to be condemned. Every American has to understand what this is. Raiding the homes of a faithful Catholic family who simply stands up for the lives of the unborn. Raiding their homes in the early morning hours of a Friday at gunpoint with dozens of agents over an incident of over a year ago that was tantamount to a shoving match. This was a message. This was a message from those in power. You oppose us, we will destroy you. You oppose us, we will terrorize your family. We will raid your home. We will break you financially through the legal process. By the way, they arrested Mr. Hauck under a violation of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, or the FACE Act. Now, again, for those of you who aren't familiar with the story, Mr. Hauck was involved in a shoving match with a guy that got in his son's face over a year ago in front of a Planned Parenthood clinic. But remember what I said, because the guy was an escort, this is what makes this story. If this were just a guy walking down the sidewalk who was a left winger and started harassing Mr. Houck and his son, this wouldn't be a story. But because this, see, these, what's happening, and those of you who are pro-life folks, particularly those of you who do this sort of thing in front of clinics, they're smart. They're very smart. As I said earlier, Brian Sims and Democrats in the Philadelphia area have been making a longstanding tradition of trying to antagonize and goad pro-lifers into doing something physical. If they can get this to the next level, then they delegitimize all pro-lifers. And more importantly, what they achieve is the full weight of the federal government right now under Joe Biden and Merrick Garland raiding the home of people who are pro-life. So a year ago, Mr. Houck shoved a guy who wouldn't get out of his son's face, who happened to be a pro-life escort. He wasn't a Planned Parenthood, pro-abortion escort. The guy wasn't escorting any woman to an abortion at the time. He just happened to be an escort for Planned Parenthood. That was enough, though. So he tried to sue Mr. Houck for assault, and the court threw it out. Said, this is an assault. Get away. Get out of here. They tossed it. A year later, Merrick Garland's DOJ comes busting down Mr. Houck's door in Bucks County. This was a message. Yes, it's to intimidate you, but it's also a political message. It's to help base turnout. They need an excited base. This is all part and parcel. The Biden speech in front of Independence Hall, screaming and pounding his fists with the fiery red behind him about the semi-fascists. Hillary Clinton was out there this weekend talking about Trump's rally looked like a Nazi party rally. She's at it again. It's deplorables on steroids. The Democrat Party has decided their only play. I mean, Josh Shapiro this weekend, who's running for governor in Pennsylvania. Josh Shapiro, they're reduced to this because they don't have anything else. What do they have to sell? As Jen Psaki admitted, if they have to talk about the economy, if they have to talk about the crime, they can't. It will devastate them. So all they can do is tell you, the opposing side is really scary, and if you don't help me stop them, if we don't do something to stop the opposing side to us, they're very scary. Now, I know for those of us here in Realville, those of us who don't live under gaslighting, it makes no sense. You're seeing an abusive government right now. You're seeing totalitarianism right now, and you're saying, what are they talking about? They're afraid of us? They're beating the hell out of us. Yeah, but they've convinced themselves you deserve it. You're the evil opposition, don't you know? You're the extremists. Josh Shapiro tweets out, in the eyes of Doug Mastriano, this race isn't about the people of Pennsylvania. It's about 2024. He knows that the key to Donald Trump's reelection is winning Pennsylvania. He's shown he'll use whatever means necessary to make it happen. So are you getting this? I know you are now. This is not about the raid on the Houcks. I'm sorry for the Houck family. And by the way, you should know, if you don't, there is it's not GoFundMe. It's actually Give, Send, Go. There's a Give, Send, Go page for the Houcks, H-O-U-C-K. The goal of the fundraiser was to collect $75,000, and I think they've well surpassed that. As of yesterday, and I looked, I think they were approaching nearly $100,000, and good, because they're going to need every bit of it. Joe and Ashley Gerecht created the crowdfunding page. Earlier, I was referencing Brian Sims, the Democrat, the rabid, kind of unbalanced Democrat who has made it his practice to attack and harass people who are pro-lifers in front of Planned Parenthood. He actively tries to go out and goad and dox and harass. This is the Democrat playbook. They've done this for years now. Brian Sims has been one of the worst. He tried to dox a couple of young girls years ago on video. I'll give $100 to anybody who can tell me who these young girls are. He had to apologize for that. Even Democrats called him out for that at the time. But the parents of the girls that he tried to dox in that video, they started this crowdfunding page for the Houck family, which is really cool. So they're working in concert. But again, folks, the broader point here to understand is the speech by Joe Biden, the pounding and the screaming and the fiery red, the raid on the Houcks, the raid on Mar-a-Lago, it's all the same thing. Yes, it's abusive. It's abhorrent. It is shocking. It is chilling. We're at a pivot point. We're at an inflection point as a country. This is all hands on deck. This is critical for Republicans to understand. This is critical for Republican voters to understand. Any petulance or pettiness or pissed off that you are about the primary needs to be shelved. This is serious. These people mean you ill, to put it mildly. We aren't that far off from a place where these people believe you and I ought to be rounded up. I mean, they're in the process of it. That's what Merrick Garland's DOJ just did to the House. They have declared war on you. You are their enemy. You are their enemy. You are the extremist, and you must be stopped. Jen Psaki, again, told us what this is about. Josh Shapiro tweeting is telling us what this is about. They have nothing to run on. They have destroyed this country. They're actively destroying this country. And so they are weaponizing their power for the limited time they have it left to take it out on you and try to sell their base that we're the extremists that the country must fear. And as such, we must be rounded up and detained. So I know most of this audience gets it, but if there are some of you that don't, it's time to get it. That's what this is. This ain't just about the House or Mar-a-Lago or the speech in front of Independence. It's about you. It's about 75 million of us who didn't vote with these people. They've declared war on you. We're their enemy. They deem us extremists because we don't share their political point of view. And they're hoping that there's enough of them that are scared enough of us that they'll run out there and continue to keep the Democrats in power this fall. We freedom-loving, liberty-loving, limited government-loving Americans have a job to do in November. And it's to bring these people to heel politically. It has to happen. No, listen, they're calling the new prime minister of Italy a fascist, too. She's a far-right kook, too, and yet she overwhelmingly won. They got a new female prime minister in Italy. She gave a barn burner of a speech, too. I was just reading the transcription of her speech. I wish I knew Italian. Might have to read the transcript of it later. But are you noticing a theme here? The prime minister of Italy is a far-right fascist. Libertarians are far-right fascists. Republicans, parents, families, 75 million voters. Fascists. Extremists. Smearing ordinary people as extremists. It has historical precedent, folks. But the simple fact is, when it all comes right down to it, they wouldn't need this much propaganda. They wouldn't need to smear so many ordinary Americans if they were winning on the issues.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
I wanted to tell you that I really like your show.
Hi, Chris. A huge fan of you and Fast Steady.
Good morning, Chris. Great show as usual.
A big fan. I listen every day.
News that came out today relative to the economy. Actually, I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Folks, coming up in just about a half an hour, the Republican candidate for governor here in Pennsylvania, Doug Mastriano, will join the show. Doug, deeply concerned, as I know you are, as we all are, about this federal agent raid on the Houck family in Bucks County early Friday morning. Doug issued a press release on it. He wanted to come on the air and talk about it today. Of course, we were grateful to have him and get his perspective on it. He's been working alongside people who know a thing or two about this. And as I said before, it's paramount to understand that while it's terrifying and sad and tragic and un-American and horrific and all of the things that you can describe it as for the Houck family, for you and me, the implications are something else. It's political. The Houcks are being used as a blunt force instrument. We did speak, by the way. We reached out, and Fast Eddie did a lot of work on this over the weekend, and it wasn't for a lack of trying. I said I really deeply wanted to at least speak to the legal representation of the Houck family to get their side of it, because I wanted to hear firsthand. I don't like, particularly when you're talking about national media. You know, when national media reports on something that happens in Bucks County, I would always prefer to go to the source. So you did actually speak to Mark Houck yesterday, Fast Eddie. He is not detained now. He's back home. Is that true?
Correct. Yes, he is.
Yeah. And I don't know. Most of this was probably off the record, so maybe not for air. But long story short, they obviously have legal representation. His wife granted a couple of interviews to kind of explain what had happened. And you know, I read a couple of her accounts over the weekend in the press. But now they've kind of officially gone quiet, understandably, I think, per their counsel, right?
Yeah, that's how it was put to me late yesterday, yeah. Is that they're moving forward with a team.
But home was raided, shackled, taken downtown, the whole bit.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's how intense this really was. Like, I mean, taken to the federal building, like, removed from his home forcefully.
Yeah. And, again, this is to send a message that you're an extremist, that particularly those who support life and oppose abortion are so extreme, it warrants dozens of FBI agents beating down your door, shackling you and hauling you off for federal processing. This is a message. This is a political message. And remember what Jen Psaki said to Chuck Todd this weekend. It's about extremism. If the Democrats can convince you that the opposition to them is too extreme and too dangerous to be elected, their hope is that they can get a base of support turned out enough, scared enough, that any opposition to those currently in charge, too dangerous to elect. So you got to keep the Democrats in power. Despite all this, what is true? Washington Post, ABC News, registered voter poll out this weekend. Rank the top issues facing you. What's number one? 900 registered voters, Washington Post, polled over the weekend. Number one issue facing voters right now, registered voters. Fast Eddie, want to guess?
The economy?
That's exactly right, and it's not even close. Inflation, rising prices at number two, that's at 80%, which I would put kind of one on the same. What's next, unrelated to the economy? Want to guess?
Crime?
Number four on this list. Right above it, though, still think Glenn Youngkin. Education, schools. Yeah. Coming in third, crime fourth, and then abortion, immigration, climate change. So that's the question. Will this stuff work? The angry, screaming speeches by Biden in front of Independence Hall, the raids on pro-life people's homes. Liz Cheney actually said this weekend she's not even sure she wants the Republicans to win. She wants more January 6th hearings. Does this January 6th extremist, you know, federal raids on political enemies, Mar-a-Lago, talking about Trump, will that distract from the economy? Let's ask EJ Antoni about it, one of our favorite guests on the matter, research fellow for regional economics in the Center for Data Analysis at the Heritage Foundation. He's actually studied how this recession that we're presently in and this 40-year high inflation, how it's impacting each and every household on average across the country. EJ, welcome back to the show. You just heard the stats. It's overwhelming that registered voters say the economy is top of their mind. Do you think, I mean, I know your wheelhouse is the economy. Do you think Democrats can distract from it with this Republicans are extremist wackos, we've got to stop stuff that they're doing?
Well, Chris, they're certainly trying, but at some point, people are going to see past the rhetoric, I think, because at some point, when you don't have enough money in your budget to pay for your mortgage or your rent, when you don't have enough money to pay for your food and your gasoline, when you're not able to raise your kids, I mean, people are going to see through all the rhetoric, and they're going to blame the people in power for causing this disaster.
You have a very specific number that you have uncovered, got a lot of attention headed into the weekend. You've calculated the direct monetary impact on most families.
Right. So if you just look at inflation, in other words, how much faster prices have risen than wages, the average American has lost about $3,000 equivalent in annual salary compared to when Joe Biden first took office. Now, if you add on top of that the higher borrowing costs from interest rate increases, now we have an additional about $1,200 that people are having to shoulder. So you're looking at a total loss of the annual equivalent of about $4,200.
Wow. And people obviously feel it. I also know on the gas price front, I think Americans, and I'm not talking about this audience, I'm talking about, you know, the general public that maybe doesn't pay as much attention to the news on a daily basis. Do you think most of the country still understands what makes gas prices go higher and the fact that we have an administration committed to not developing more of it? Is that in the marrow of the American public yet, or are we still just kind of at this entry level? Gosh, gas prices are expensive, and, you know, Biden wants to take credit for them coming down a little bit, even though it's really about consumption. It has nothing to do with production or there being more of it. I'm trying to figure out if that's in the conscience of most Americans yet or not. Do you have any sense of it?
Oh, no, I think in a lot of ways, a lot of Americans, unfortunately, and this, by the way, is not the fault of the common man. This is very much the fault of the educational establishment. But I think most people have a very elementary understanding when it comes to not just gas prices, but the price mechanism in general and all of the multitude of factors that go into setting the price for any one product, not just gasoline.
You wrote also another piece about Biden's student loan handout. It doesn't seem like it has gotten a lot of traction politically. Democrats seem to be running from it too. Almost as soon as it popped up, they seem to be running away from it. From what I've read, polling, even amongst Democrats, it's pretty unpopular because anybody who's carried a student loan balance or currently has one or paid theirs off says, hey, what about me? That's not fair.
No, that's exactly right. You have people who paid off their loans. You have people who worked through school so that they didn't have to take out loans. You had people who never went to higher education, people who went into the trades or some other profession. I mean, it's absolute nonsense that we are going to subsidize people who literally make more money than everyone else. If you look at basically since the pandemic, literally the only group in the entire country, the only demographic whose incomes rose faster than prices was those with at least a college degree. And yet we're going to ask everyone else in the country to subsidize them. People who literally have less money now in real terms are going to be forced to fork over cash to that group that is doing better than they are. And this whole idea that this is because of the pandemic, I mean, it's just utter hogwash. You look at the number of college grads today who have jobs versus before the pandemic, it's gone up by 3.7 million. Their incomes have gone up. Their unemployment rate today is lower than it was before the pandemic. Their unemployment rate of 1.9% is so low. There are only a handful of times in history when it has been down this far.
EJ Antoni with us from the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. The housing market is of particular interest to me because it seemed like the if you want to call it the lag in an economy that was struggling, we saw housing values just stay up, 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 way up. People were selling, refinancing, pulling a lot of cash. I had this working theory. I think I ran it by you before that, yes, the government was paying a lot of people not to work. But I think after that concluded, compound that with a lot of people found it was like a Brinks truck was coming out of a lot of people's homes. People that had been sitting on their homes for a long time were able to either sell them for huge gains or maybe refinance and pull cash out. So I had this working theory that the housing market actually injected a lot of cash in people's pockets and kept us afloat for longer than the economy would have ordinarily allowed us. Is there anything to that?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. No, that is spot on. What we did was we by driving interest rates so low and then also by the Federal Reserve buying so many mortgage-backed securities, which is what they did in the fallout from the 2007, 8, and 9 housing and financial crises. By buying up all those bonds, they created a demand for the underlying asset, which is mortgages. And so banks did everything they could to sell mortgages and to get them out the door and sell them essentially right to the Fed. So that meant that banks didn't really care about, you know, things like, what's your credit score? Gee, does this sound familiar? They didn't care about things like, how much equity are you actually going to have in the house? What's your down payment, et cetera? What's your income? So now people basically got, as you said, the Brinks trucks of cash, and they were able to buy homes that they couldn't afford. And now, I mean, we have default and delinquency rates already beginning to climb. But once these adjustable rate mortgages kick in, especially the 2.28s, I mean, we're going to be in the same situation we were a little more than a decade ago.
Oh, so you anticipate that in many ways we're still kind of fast and loose with home lending out there. I was kind of under the impression that that had tightened up, but not so much, you're saying.
Well, in recent days, it has tightened up tremendously. And the reason for that is because if you compare interest rates today with these recent rate hikes as to when Joe Biden first got into office, they have caused the monthly payment of a median home to literally double. And that's before you factor in the price increase on that same home, which further increases the cost. So now people who are going to the bank to get a loan all of a sudden find that they can't afford the monthly payment on the loan that's needed to buy the house they want, which is why home sales are tanking, which is why home building is tanking. Because if you look at home builders, the home building sentiment, by the way, has collapsed almost in half this year. And the reason for that is because these home builders are looking at their own prices not coming down, the prices for the things that they have to buy to make the home, except that when they turn around and try to sell the home, they can no longer sell it for the same elevated price because rates are going up and the consumer can't afford the monthly payment.
So if you, I mean, if you are in a position to buy a home, we're probably coming into a boon of a time for the buyer. You could probably get a deal out there in one sense, I would guess.
Well, there's basically two competing factors, and it's going to depend on each person's situation. The first is, if you're sitting on a ton of cash and you don't actually need to borrow that much, then the interest rate doesn't really affect you. And so you're typically better off as we go into these interest rate hike cycles. You're usually better off waiting because prices are going to come down and that will impact your total expense more than the interest rate hikes. However, if you're in the opposite situation where you don't have any money to put down, then you're more likely to say, you know what, I need to lock in this low rate now because I'm borrowing so much. And even if the price continues to drop a little bit, in the long run, I'll still be better off. Obviously, though, that's a much riskier strategy because now you have to worry about being underwater. And you know, right now, the Fed is basically content to let home prices slowly decline, but they have trillions of dollars in mortgage-backed securities on their balance sheet, trillions of dollars. If they decide to start liquidating that, we are in trouble, and this whole thing goes sideways right quick. You may say, well, what are the odds of that happening? Jerome Powell literally just said at the last press conference it was off the table. You know what else he said was off the table? A 75 basis point hike, and then immediately after that, he gave us three in a row. So people should definitely be concerned about being underwater on their homes in the future if they levered up too much. And when, when I talk about being underwater, I mean severe, as in the last housing crisis.
Wow. So this notion that we'd gotten that under control and the days of us getting into this kind of a housing bubble, you say we're still very much in jeopardy of that, is basically what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it is not an exaggeration to say that some people, again, depending on what the Fed does, they're the big wild card here, as they've proven to be the last 2 years. But if the Fed gets aggressive enough, people are going to be so underwater, they'll feel like Ted Kennedy drove them home. Let me put it that way.
EJ, do you I know you're not a pollster, but is it going to be impossible to avoid the economy? A lot of Democrats don't even want to have a debate right now. Literally, they're just refusing to debate. But is it impossible to avoid the economy?
No, I don't think so, because, again, even if no one wants to talk about it, you don't need to tell the common man that he can't afford to pay his bills. You don't need to tell the common man that his budget has been constrained. You don't need to tell the common man that he feels worse off today than he was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I mean, you don't need to actually talk about these things for the common man to feel them day in and day out. Now, would a debate help bring that issue to the forefront and help explain the why behind how people or why people are feeling the way they are? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure it's going to be necessary.
And they're promising that most of 2023 is still going to be just rotten, which, you know, I hate to be a downer, but I haven't heard anybody say that we're not going to spend most of 2023 in this same cycle. Do you have any reason to think short-term optimism is on the way?
No, none whatsoever, unfortunately. You know, at this point, some people, you know, previously and going back several months were asking me like, oh my gosh, are you worried about a recession? Are you worried about a recession? And I would say, absolutely. I think we're already in one. And now when people ask me the same question, I say, no, I'm not worried about the recession. I'm worried about the double dip. You know, we already had the recession in the first half of the year. The third quarter looks like it may eke out positive growth. But then after that, I mean, I see no reason whatsoever to have growth. Right now, the only large positive contributor to GDP is our export market. Well, guess what? The dollar is strengthening relative to virtually every other currency in the world. The British pound just fell to a record low against the dollar, which is going to kill our export market.
Are you concerned about the Chinese economy and what that could mean for us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, China is our biggest adversary. So, you know, it's a shame. This whole idea that really, I don't know if you could say it started with Nixon, but he probably pushed it into overdrive. This idea that by becoming an intimate trade partner with China, we were somehow going to moderate them has proven to be an utter failure. Instead, they have moderated us, and we have become reliant on them instead of the other way around.
EJ, this is really, I appreciate the insight, and I agree with you. I can't imagine that the Democrats are going to convince people that the economy doesn't matter. They're sure trying to distract with anything else they can, but it's just not what people are living. So I agree with you. Important read, a couple of different pieces. One, 2 + 2 = 5 in Biden's student loan handout, and the other is this new study out of Heritage. Americans have lost $4,200 in income under Biden, wiping out Trump gains. Thanks for your time again this morning, EJ. We appreciate it.
Chris, thank you so much for having me.
Telephone number 610-850-0990. I think that's the question before us here. And you know better than anybody because you pay close attention to this stuff. If you're out with friends, coworkers, whatever, after work or maybe on a weekend, maybe this weekend you were out to dinner and in mixed company, and the subject of politics comes up. Are people talking about abortion? Again, I'm not talking about you and me. I'm not talking about people that pay attention to this stuff. Is abortion what comes up? Is Trump, Mar-a-Lago, January 6th, is that what comes up? Or are people talking about what EJ and I were just talking about? Is that what people are living? I say yes. Is that naive? I don't know. You know, Doug Mastriano is on the way. He's running for governor in Pennsylvania. Josh Shapiro is tweeting all weekend. What he tweets now is, if Doug Mastriano becomes governor, it's all to be, it's all a plot. It's all a part to insert himself to get Donald Trump elected. If you vote for Doug Mastriano, you're voting to get Trump elected in 2024. He has a scheme. Does that work? I don't have the answer. I want to believe no. But this is what we're up against. Despite everything that is true and everything that we're living, the Democrats want to try to scare their base to voting for them. It would be the first time in American history, I think, that voters, rather than support their candidate, were convinced that they should be more scared of the opposition to their failure. Their candidate sucks so bad, the only reason you will continue to support them is because you're scared of the other candidate. I'll just say, folks, if the day after the election comes and that's worked, what is it Rush used to say? I'll tell you when it's time to panic. I don't know. I don't know if it's panic time, but it's going to be very dispiriting if this works. I at this moment, I don't see it. Sounds like the Doug Mastriano of Italy just won. George Will is over there on CNN, just apoplectic this morning. Italy elects most right-wing government since World War II. Oh, no. It's fascists, fascists everywhere. That was the Associated Press headline yesterday. Polls open as Italians vote in general election that could yield the nation's first government led by far right since World War II. My theme today has been that's all the Democrats have, is to scare you more over the alternative to them than be scared of the current things they've inflicted upon us. Democrats believe they can scare you more over their opposition to them than defend their own record of destruction. If it works, folks, we're in trouble. I don't think it works. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I don't think it works. Here's an example. Josh Shapiro, who's running for governor. 8 years, he's been the top cop in Pennsylvania. How's that going? Does Josh Shapiro deserve a promotion? How's the crime rate in Pennsylvania? Are you pleased with Josh Shapiro? Are you pleased with Democrats' leadership? I'm not, and neither is he. How do I know? Because he tweets things like this. In the eyes of Doug Mastriano, this race isn't about the people of Pennsylvania. It's about 2024. He knows the key to Donald Trump's reelection is winning Pennsylvania, and he's shown he'll use whatever means necessary to make it happen. Now, folks, that tells me they got nothing left to run on. They know they don't. So they've decided their only calculation at this point is to make everybody believe, as many people as they can get to believe, that opposition to them is scary. Does Doug Mastriano think that will work? He joins us now. I'll ask him. Mr. Mastriano, welcome back. Thanks for your time this morning. Hi.
Good morning, Chris, and I do appreciate you having me on.
It's always an honor. I'm grateful for your time because I know you're busy and we're closing in on it. So, this is not new. We've talked a lot about this, but it's just so obvious. It's foot on the gas pedal. Just can we scare the hell out of people about our opposition? That is you and Republicans. That's their play at this point. They have no record to run on, obviously.
You know, and I try to, I'm a candidate, so obviously I do have a bias because I'm fully in this 24/7. But honestly, I try to look at it, you know, with my thinking cap on. And I don't think it's going to work because we saw what happened in Mayfair a couple of days ago, you know, the raid on Wawa, the lawlessness in our, especially in the Southeast, but it's creeping everywhere across Pennsylvania. I don't think it's going to work. And Chris, let me give you some more information. So last Monday there was the March for Life in Harrisburg, and they say it was the largest gathering of individuals, you know, in the history of the steps there. Okay, maybe I don't know, but there was at least 5,000-6,000 people there in defense of life. The next day, Planned Parenthood came, and I was there, Chris, for both, so this is just not hyperbole. I was there, and the next day, Planned Parenthood came, and they had no more than 65 people. And so Josh Shapiro and the Democrats have been beating the drum on Roe v. Wade so excessively, and we're hearing a narrative out of the media that that's going to get the Democrat base out. Actually, I saw with my own eyes because they're complete opposite this past week.
And, Doug, I'm sure you've heard it firsthand because you travel the Commonwealth regularly. There's new polling out today from Washington Post, ABC News, among registered voters, and the issues are clear. Overwhelmingly, it's the economy and inflation leading, followed by education and schools, followed by crime. Abortion doesn't come in until well down the list at fourth, and it polls dramatically lower than those other issues I just mentioned.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I have honestly traveled every corner of the state. We're going to wrap up our 67 county tour began in May, didn't tour in June because I was in session. And actually this Saturday in Bucks County, we're going to wrap up our 67 county tour. And everywhere I go, Chris, it's a fact. Crime, the economy, / inflation, even election reform sticks its head in above the abortion issue. So we're seeing people are being hit in the wallet. So when people are being directly affected, we saw this during the Carter years, you know, when Ronald Reagan asked if you were better off. And Pennsylvania, are you better off with Josh Shapiro being the top cop, as he calls himself? And that's kind of an insult, actually. But he is the senior law enforcement official. And the fact of the matter is we're pushing 946 carjackings or attempts in the Southeast, mostly Philadelphia, this year alone. We're on track for about 600 homicides potentially this year. And now nearly 40% increase in crime, all under Josh Shapiro. neither he nor his buddies in the media will ask him questions about his record, and it's stunning to me.
Crime is a vulnerability for Democrats. Jen Psaki said it yesterday on Meet the Press. Right. If Democrats have to defend crime, particularly in Pennsylvania, she said it's a major vulnerability, which is why they don't want to talk about it. They'd rather scare people into believing that you're the scary one. You're the extremist. I don't know that most people walking, you know, through Philadelphia at night are scared that Doug Mastriano is going to carjack them or ransack their Wawa.
Yeah, I hope not, because, you know, it wasn't it.
But, you know, that's what they'd have you believe, that you're a more frightening prospect than the hellscape people are living right now in Philadelphia, for heaven's sakes.
It is insanity. And it's kind of funny, Chris, because they're saying the same thing about Carrie Lake in Arizona and Dan Cox in Maryland and about Governor Kemp in Georgia. They're actually saying that he's too extreme and dangerous. It's like, are you kidding me? He's like Mr. Moderate. So this is clear. And the second part of their playbook is don't debate the Republican. They're not debating, yes, in Arizona. They're not debating in Maryland. Of course, Josh Shapiro is not debating. He's running from me about this. It's kind of funny.
Is it true that I read that you said, I love this quote if it's true. I think it was yours. You said, I'll even let him have Donna Brazile as his moderator because she'll give him his questions in advance.
It's true. That's me, yeah.
It's pretty good. That's pretty strong. What is the status? No debate? Because you basically said, look, you pick a moderator, I'll pick a moderator. That you've kind of set the terms there. You don't want it to be some media moderator. You say, each of us get one, is sort of your condition?
Yes, and open media, everyone can come, la-di-da-di, everybody, and let's go at it. And he didn't just say no, but he said, heck no. And so then I said, well, how about a Stephen Douglas Lincoln debate where we just go back and forth and there is no moderator? And he's like, oh, no, absolutely not on that one, too. This is a gimmick. It's like, no, it's not, Josh.
So. Amazing. Amazing. Let's turn to something I know your campaign's well aware of. You issued a press release on it yesterday. The Houck family in Bucks County, well-known, well-liked in Catholic and pro-life circles. Friday, their home was raided by many, many, many members of the FBI, dozens, the report says. Mr. Houck taken away in leg irons and sent downtown. This all stems from something over a year ago. Apparently, some guy was harassing his 12-year-old son. There was some shoving. It went to court. It was dismissed as a matter in court. But a year later, Merrick Garland's Justice Department raids the Houck family's home early Friday morning. It's chilling, but as I was saying earlier, Doug, it's meant to send a message to everybody. And I think it's all part and parcel of this same thing. It's also the Biden speech in front of Independence Hall, right? It's this, our opposition are fascists and they're scary and we have to storm their homes and sweep them up and put them in leg irons. They're that frightening. I think it's all part of that messaging. How do you see it?
Yeah, I do as well. So, and this is the result of, it's not just rhetoric that Merrick Garland or Joe Biden, what they're saying this, and then they're giving guidance clearly to the Department of Justice. And I got to be honest with you, this is chilling. I mean, when in American history was the Department of Justice so weaponized? You know, maybe a bit under Hoover, but this is making Hoover look like a lightweight. Chris, in Afghanistan, when we find a senior level Taliban enemy who is heavily armed, guarded by heavily armed people, who's killed many Afghans and Americans, when we'd identify them with our intel sources and do a raid to either detain him or mostly to capture him. If you don't want to capture him, you just send a bomb over there. But we would send about, you know, 25, 30 soldiers out there, specially trained and lots of vehicles, and that's what they did with this guy, you know, a pro-life counselor. You're going to send over about, you know, 12, a dozen to 15 vehicles, 30 law enforcement. Are you kidding me? Department of Justice and FBI, where is the proportionality? Is there anyone there that's going to drop the BS flag and say, stop, this is overkill? You know, that's fine if they want to bring charges on him, but send one or two cars over there, do it discreetly. Don't have weapons drawn on the guy in his house with all seven kids hanging out there crying and screaming and in terror. This is designed to send a message, and it needs to stop. I already have legislation in the Senate that would prohibit my state law enforcement at all levels from cooperating with the federal government in anything like this here. And this is another reason why you need me a governor, because I will be a firewall in many of these areas.
Doug, people are, It's funny because I understand that now at this point in history, we're at this really tragic and sad point where the country is being told by Democrats that any alternative to them is scary and frightening, and they should be afraid. And I don't know what percentage actually buy into that. Too many, I'm afraid. And I guess, you know, not that a lot of those people would be listening to this show right now, but what do you say to people who literally believe you're some kind of evil, that you're frightening, that you're a fascist, that you have some subversive plot when you become governor? You know, people talk that way about you. So what would you say?
In Pittsburgh, I encountered a lady who was, you know, who fully drank the Kool-Aid. And so I engaged. She was alone. It was no cameras. So it was an honest conversation. And she would make those assertions, and I'd reply to that, and she was so flustered, and it was respectful. There was, you know, on either side, you know, she would make an assessment or an assertion that Josh Shapiro put out there. I'd rebuff it in one sentence, and she'd move on to the next. She was so frustrated that nothing was true, that she just kind of walked away. You know, Chris, for those who, you know, drink the Kool-Aid and believe whatever they're watching on TV or what their party officials tell them, it really, I can't help them unless they open their own eyes and open their own ears. But for those that are open-minded and sit down and either have a conversation with me or look at my biography, where I actually, unlike Josh Shapiro, I physically put my life on the line to defend our Constitution and our laws for 30 years. It's just not talk. Unlike Josh Shapiro, you know, whose biggest sacrifice was eating burnt avocado toast, you know, at the country club one weekend. And this is something so serious to me. Watch my lives. I live stream, you know. Back in the day, you remember when Wagner was running, the Democrats had an operative following him around, you know, with a phone to film every word he said. You know, I film my stuff. They don't even have to do that. I live broadcast just about everything that I can. So watch with an open ear. And I'm about returning freedom to your hands and defending that freedom as I did all my life. It's not about imposing my will on the people, as Josh Shapiro wants to do. It's about letting you walk as free men and women to run your businesses, to decide if you want your kids to have masks or not have some bureaucrat tell you that, to decide whether you want a jab and not lose your job. I mean, it comes down that it's really a lot of common sense. You know, when I talk about my first 100 days in office there, when I'm listing my litany of things, which we will do, Chris, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, no boys in the girls' bathroom, and I get an applause. I'm like, have we really come that low in Pennsylvania? You know, no boys on the girls' team, you know, cheers. It's like Josh Shapiro stands as the antithesis of freedom, as the antithesis, you know, the opposite of reason.
Doug, when it comes to the former president, Trump, are you afraid to talk about him? They seem to think that's their calling card, that him, that the election of 2020, the January 6th stuff, they think that's their calling card. I don't know how often you encounter that out on the campaign trail. You know, these people that you say, you know, just instinctively knee jerk, hate your guts. But how do you address that?
Well, you know, and let me speak from experiences here rather than, you know, theoretically. Yeah, some of those talking points come up. I'm not afraid to talk about any of that. But, you know, the media, of course, the list you gave me of crime, you know, economy, and, you know, all the other table talk, that's not on the lips of the left-wing media. That's not on the lips of the 30% that are sold out totally to the Democrat Party, roughly 30%. You know, I just answered honestly. And if it's a gimmick and it's, you know, if they're trying to get clicks and a gotcha, I just walk away. You know, as a retired Army colonel, you know, I've stood before presidents and prime ministers, you know, hostile generals, and giving advice they don't want to hear. I'm not afraid to talk to anybody, but if it's clickbait, I'm not going to waste my time. I really have a low tolerance for fools and foolishness. Yeah. And so if we're going to have an honest discussion, I'll talk to anybody. But if it's all a setup, you know, you're working for the other side here, I'm not going to waste my time. You know, George MacDonald said in 1810, to give truth to him who loves it not is to give more ample opportunities for misunderstanding. And that's exactly my perspective when I'm standing there with somebody from the media. If it's going to be something to advance Josh Shapiro's cause, like the Inquirer, I know instantly anything I say will be used out of context.
Strategically speaking, you know, as I say, there's always armchair quarterbacking. There are people shouting from the stands and the sidelines that aren't in the know. They're not running a campaign. So it's always easy for people to look at something and be critical. when you hear people say they want to see more of this or less of that, they want to see more TV or they want to see more digital or they want to see, you know, more Facebook, or are you pleased with where, I'll just ask you generally, are you pleased with where your campaign stands in terms of messaging, in terms of using the media, advertising, digital or otherwise? How do you assess that versus Shapiro and Democrats, who have, we know, a boatload of money?
Yeah, I mean, I think Shapiro is pushing out $6 million in spending, or spending that's going to happen in the next few weeks. And all we've watched with the reliable polls, and the reliable polls I'm going to talk about, you probably agree with me, is Trafalgar, Emerson College, and Richard Barris's group, CGI, I think it's called. And they said over the past 4 weeks, Trafalgar had me 4 points back. I'm working my way forward here. Emerson had me 3 points back. A new Trafalgar had me 2 points back. And then then Richard Barris had us tied. So, you know, in light of that trend, and plus what I see on the campaign trail here, and in the most places we go, we have record crowds. I did an event in Perry County Friday afternoon. We planned it 48 hours before. So last minute, I'm thinking, Chris, I'll be lucky to have 25 people there. It's the middle of a work day. We had 100 people squished into a little cafe in Perry County, you know, north of Harrisburg. And that's just a vignette. You know, we stopped in Tyonesta up in Forest County. I think just about everyone in the town showed up there to the Bear Claw Cafe. So, and whether it's Erie, we get 500 or so people. We were in the southeast. They had to turn people away from Gatsby's a couple weeks ago. And then we were there back, as you know, with Rick Santorum. And we had about 500 people there on a work night. So we're seeing this across the state. So there is this movement, and people, thankfully, I think Josh Shapiro has gone too far with his advertising, you know, too far. Mastriano's radical, and people just take pause and go, wait a second. He was a colonel in the Army with top secret access for 30 years. Are you kidding me? How is that possible? And they're right. It's just simply impossible.
Yeah. And so that'll be my final question. Do you think that there are a number of people, Trafalgar ID'd them as what he called submerged voters. In 2016, they were called shy Trump voters. That is, Democrats have done such a good job at making ordinary people feel like bad people if they oppose them. They're quietly supportive of you and Republicans, but won't say so. Maybe won't even tell pollsters. Maybe even pretend they're supportive of Democrats, but then ultimately vote for you. How likely is that? Because we saw some Republicans that we heard were constantly tied or even trailing a Democrat in 2020 ended up beating them by several points. Do you anticipate that could be a possibility?
So when my wife and I were talking with Ron DeSantis and his wife privately for about 45 minutes when he came last month, he told me, and you know, and we hear the same thing from many successful governors, Doug, don't pay attention to the polls, because the polls before I won had me, you know, double digits behind. Glenn Youngkin was double digits in every poll, even up until, I think, 24 hours or 48 hours before the vote in Virginia, and he won resoundingly. I'm using those as a snapshot in time. I do agree we have entered a time when conservatives are shy or reluctant to answer some stranger on the phone with the polling data. Trafalgar has seen that. Richard Barris is seeing that. And so and plus, additionally, Chris, you know, many of those polls I mentioned, they oversampled Democrats by at least 4 points. And so how do you measure enthusiasm? You know, Richard Barris, I can say he said he wasn't, you know, sold on me, you know, months ago, but now he's watching these polls and where I stand. And he said he's very bullish on my victory here coming up. So there's that hidden, of course, aspect of people that won't answer the polls. There's oversampling of Democrats. And then how do you measure momentum, which is impossible to determine until the actual voting day?
Doug Mastriano, how can people be helpful, reach out to your campaign, donate, or volunteer?
Yeah, thank you, Chris. We need donations, and it's small-dollar donations, and we need volunteers to man the polls and to knock on doors and make phone calls. So go to DougForGov.com. That's Doug, number 4, Gov, GOV.com. Thank you, Chris. God bless you.
Let me just have a little of this. Karine Jean-Pierre and Peter Ducey back and forth. This is how I think Republicans ought to tackle this. If they want to talk about abortion, then let's go ahead and try to pin them down. When do you think abortion ought not happen? She tries it. She won't answer this. Just listen.
Does President Biden favor any limits on abortion?
We've been very, very clear here. Since you're talking about my topper, I was talking specifically about Senator Lindsey Graham.
And your position on his plan is clear. 15 weeks is unacceptable.
I was speaking directly to what Republicans are trying to do. They are calling for a national ban, which takes us backwards.
A limit,
which will it's a national ban which will take us backwards. and will put at risk the health of women. And here's the thing about this, Peter. It's not just national ban on abortion. We're talking about privacy. We're talking about contraception. We're talking about marriage. That is what extreme Republican officials are trying to do. That's what we're speaking to. I'm not going to get into specifics here.
See, so this is you get it. This is the flavor of it. This is the point. They're extreme. We're reasonable. They're extreme. And then when you very specifically press them on what they mean by extreme, they don't want to talk about it. So you support abortions after 15 weeks? Don't want to talk about it.
I want to point out.
And then there's this from Carrie Lake on Maria Bartiromo yesterday.
What Liz Cheney has said about you when speaking at this Texas Tribune conference yesterday. She says, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure Carrie Lake is not elected. Your reaction?
That might be the biggest, best gift I've ever received. I mean, the people of Wyoming can't stand her. I'm pretty much sure that the people of Arizona don't like Liz Cheney. You know, here's the deal, Maria. The Republican Party, the new Republican Party, is
this
the party
is
of
WNPP,
we the people.
This is WNPP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.